Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns zizier or they, them.
This week we're talking about season two,
episode season one. Season two!
The one with Ross's new girlfriend. This episode aired on September 21st, 1995, and it was written by Jeff Ashroff and Mike Sikowitz. It was directed by Michael Lembeck.
In this episode, Ross returns from China with a new girlfriend. Rachel is heartbroken and debates whether or not she should tell Ross how she feels. Meanwhile, Monica tries to convince Phoebe to cut her hair with disastrous results. And lastly, Chandler is sexually assaulted by Joey's Taylor.
We're back.
Are you excited? This is also take two of us being back.
We are recording right now. It is Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's
Day. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. So, Quinn, why don't we start by talking about what we've been doing for the last, like, whatever, 6, 8 weeks it's been? 8 weeks.
I know. I feel like it's been a big 8 weeks for the world. And I also think that, like, also on a more microscopic level of, like, our lives, I feel like a lot has happened, in my opinion. I guess to follow up on our final of last season, when we talked about our grandmother wasn't doing super well, she did pass. So yes, that was something that happened throughout the holidays. We had another COVID scare briefly. It was not a big deal, though. No one ended up having COVID. I turned 31. Woo-hoo. So yes, I hear like applause in the background somewhere.
Yeah. In other not related to Quinn news, Donald Trump is no longer president, which is
exactly officially
great news for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which just
yes,
means that
the Capitol got the Capitol got invaded.
Oh my god, fascists. I can't believe in take one that we did this. We were like, nothing's really happened in the last 8 weeks.
No, I think you said that.
I did say that because I was just thinking selfishly of my own life. And I was like, I've been doing nothing, really. But the world's been falling apart around me, really.
Oh my god.
What's happening?
And then also, we are both in Toronto now.
Yes, we are. I am staying in my Aunt Stephanie's condo because she has gone to Markham, Ontario in order to take care of my grandfather after my our grandmother's passing. And so I am staying in this really, 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 really beautiful, totally above my pay grade condo.
And I moved to, like, I guess the Bloor Village area. And I am practicing as a massage therapist again. So, which comes Woo-hoo. With a lot of like mixed feelings and kind of navigating having to, instead of deal with the pandemic in like a very isolated away from everything in the world, kind of like have to navigate it in a, I am now interacting very closely with people. How do I like mitigate risk and do this very responsibly? Yeah. So it's a whole other learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So a lot has happened, folks. And I'm assuming that a lot has happened for everyone else as well. So let us know what's going on with you over on our Instagram.
Yeah. And I guess like one thing that we should bring up right away is like, I guess big thank you. Like we are doing this season two, which we didn't necessarily know we were going to do, and we are doing it. And honestly, that would not have even been remotely possible without our subscribers, our Patreon subscribers, because they are
all of our Patreon subscribers.
Yes, they are the basis for us being able to continue. They pay for our base costs, I guess, to like make this podcast not cost us money. So that is huge. So thank you.
It's really like, honestly, can't even express how much we love you all and like are very grateful. And I'm going to name you all off right now because why not? So we want to thank Shannon and Allie and Anna and Ray, Keely, Rachel, Laura, and Kayla. So woo-hoo. Thank you so much for being supporters. And I also want to thank everyone who has like left us like a written review on like Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. And I think that in future we need to like read out the names of those people. But it's mm-hmm. all so helpful, and staying active on our Instagram account and yeah. recommending us to people. Oh my God. Like the influx of like love that we got, after we like made the call out in our final of last season to be like, tell your friends about us. Like our listenership did rise, guys. So mm-hmm. like, thank you for doing that. Like we can't actually name names of who did that because we don't know, but like, it is being seen. It really was like, it's, we're very thankful. Yeah, so
thank you.
We so love much. You guys. Oh my God.
Woohoo. So about season two, let's talk a little bit about how things will be different this season. So last season we were releasing polls and a podcast on a weekly basis. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we've both kind of realized that that's just straight up not sustainable for us. We were slowly starting to lose our minds, and also starting to want to murder each other a little bit. Well, me probably wanting to murder you a little bit more. I'm a little bit more in yeah. the murder brain set.
Okay, good to know. Glad we're not living together anymore. Love you lots.
Love you too. Promise I don't want to murder you. But anyways, yeah, so we're starting to get really overwhelmed. So we've switched the system. We will now be doing things on a bi-weekly basis. So polls on Tuesdays, watch party and polls on Tuesday, right, Quinn? Yes. And mm-hmm. then the podcast will release the following Tuesday. So every Tuesday there is something to look forward to. So stay tuned on Instagram and make sure you subscribe to our podcast to make sure that you get updated when we post a new episode.
Because Tuesday is our day, folks.
Tuesday's our day. Yeah. And also if you don't already know, because maybe you're just tuning in to our podcast for season two, we, throw these watch parties every Tuesday. So our watch parties, we watch the episode of Friends together, the one that we're going to be dissecting that week. And it is available to our Patreon subscribers, regardless of the amount of money that you pledge. So feel free to give us $1 a month or $100 a month. If you have $100 to give us a month, that would be super amazing.
We would. Ooh, damn.
Super love you forever. And
podcast so, sugar daddy.
Yeah, that would be, oh my God, definitely so good. We could like have a website.
Please be our podcast sugar daddy.
Yeah, that'd be so great. But anyways, yes. So if you support us there, you can get invited, or you are invited to our watch parties on Tuesdays. Okay. So, whoa, season two, let's get into it.
And like big, because like, it was like a big cliffhanger at the end of season one, right? Like, we, you know, have talked about how we didn't actually follow Friends when it was coming out. Because, I mean, I think we were a little bit too young for seasons one and two. But, like, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to, like, have, you know, season one end and just be like, oh, my God.
I know.
And then super this stressful. Happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal. Very cool, though.
I know. Because they don't want to make it too easy, right? Like, like what would be the fun in that? So instead, you know, Rachel is in the airport waiting for Ross, super cute. And Ross walks out with...
Julie. Well, who we now know is Julie. We didn't know at the end of last season that her name was Julie, but we now do. Julie played yeah. by Lauren Tom.
I love Julie so much, and I'm very excited for her to be in the show right now.
Yeah, she's honestly, I think she's just like a really sweet, kind character. And like, I do feel maybe, oh my God, maybe I'm just getting ahead of myself. Maybe we can talk about this in another episode when we know a little bit more about Julie. But I do feel like she might be a little bit two dimensional. Like they don't really flesh out her character very much. We don't actually know a lot about Julie. We just know that she is dating Ross. And while we know that they met, that they knew each other in grad school and they re-met on this dig that they were just both on. So she was in charge of the dig and that's how they met.
Right.
But okay, let's get into the first scene because it's like,
well, why don't, okay, I was gonna say, why don't we, because I feel like we're gonna like get really into it, why don't we first talk about what we want to talk about this episode?
Okay, yes. So the three things
also we wanna I want to know, like, your initial feels of the episode actually as well, like, okay, right, just general, yeah, sentiments,
the things that we normally do at the start of the podcast, but I'm just too excited to talk about the episode itself that I just I'm forgetting that we do those things,
and also like we just don't remember how to podcast.
Yeah, like super rusty. We told you, we promised you that we would be rusty. It is happening. Okay, yes, so initial feels of this episode. I feel like this episode is really relatable. Like, I feel super relatable to Rachel in this episode. Like, I'm just like, Rachel, I feel your pain.
I feel like this show is speaking to me. I have all, like, the love sentiment feels. I think it's just such a relatable episode. I think that Rachel is like, it's very cathartic to see her reaction, you know, to like every other human who's like been maybe in a similar situation or something.
Yeah.
I think that in also rewatching it in like a very like intentional way of like knowing that we're like going to be talking about it in a more dissecting way, you know, it was also like really shocking to like, really see how like there's a lot of sexual assault that's like very like normalized, yeah, and like kind of like just like washed over.
For sure.
And I think that that's, I mean, that's gonna give us a lot to talk about today, but I think it was like kind of surprising in that sense, because sorry, something just fell off my wall. But yeah, essentially, I just think that, I just think it's a very relatable episode, and there's a lot to talk about here. Yeah. Speaking of which, Emily, what are the three things you want to talk about?
So yeah, so I wrote them down this time, which I often forget to write down. I want to talk about, like, right away, right off the bat, anti-Asian racism. So, as we've already, well, whatever, we'll talk about it when we get there. Number two, I want to talk about rape in prison. Wow, this is a big fucking episode. And number three, on a much lighter note, I just want to talk about Ross and Rachel in general and all my feels around that. Like, I literally wrote, Ross and Rachel, that's what I want to talk about. So yeah.
Yes.
How about you?
There's just so much to talk about on like such a large spectrum, like such like a darker level, and also like the meaty lovey stuff too, you know.
Totally. This is gonna be a long podcast. I can feel it already.
I know. It's our first time back. It's fine. I want to talk, about sexual assault, the just general sliding over, but like also more specifically, like really narrowing our conversation a bit more into like sexual assault of like men being victims of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Because it's something that like also needs to be more a part of our conversations.
For sure.
I think I also want to, okay, this is really silly, but I want to talk about the fact that Chandler and Rachel are wearing like matching shirts, but like not really. Like they're very, very similar shirts. Just a very questionable 90s trend that was maybe a thing at the time. Okay. I also want to talk about, I guess, I don't know if this is a good episode to really get into it because we have so much to talk about already, but like tabling it. The concept of like, what do you do when you're like, I don't know, in a good relationship and then there's someone that you're in love with that also, I don't know, that opportunity comes up.
Right. You know? Yeah. Makes sense. Okay.
But maybe that's something more for moving forward in other episodes.
Yeah, where totally. It's more relevant. Because this is going to be a plot point for the next few episodes for sure. The Ross and Julie thing. Okay. Yeah. So setting the scene, we are in the airport. Ross is off the plane. He's got his arm around Julie. Rachel is waiting there, and then, you know, cut to cliffhanger, and then we're back. and Rachel basically sees Ross and now has a bit of a panic. And in this very, very, again, very relatable kind of panic of like, oh my God, what do I do? I shouldn't be here. This was a mistake. What am I going to say? Total panic, jumps over and falls on her face, and she gets up and she's bleeding. Her head is bleeding. And Ross sees her and is like, oh, Rachel, like, thanks for coming, I guess, which is kind of weird. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's kind of this like weird thing where it's like, he's like, oh, Rachel, like, was he expecting someone to pick him up? Was he not expecting someone to pick him up? I don't know.
Like, this is a situation where I feel like I can understand why Ross would maybe be oblivious to the implications of the situation. But I 100% think that, like, if I was Julie, I would definitely 100% be suspicious of this situation and my new partner being, like, completely oblivious to what's going on here. Or not sharing something
maybe,
with me.
But maybe not. You know? Because, like, it's like, if you don't know Rachel at all, like, she's like a real weirdo in this episode. And so, like, Julie's like first impression of Rachel could just be like, Rachel's a big weirdo. You know, like, if she.
Rachel's the Phoebe.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. What a table turner. But it's kind of true. Like, Rachel's just like kind of this super weird, doesn't really know how to be a real human the entire episode. And it's just, like, maybe Julie just thinks Rachel is this way. I don't know.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Okay. So then we get blessed, and maybe we will move right away into one of the first topics that I wanted to talk about. We get blessed with this very, very, very brutal line from Rachel, in which upon meeting Julie, she just assumes that because Julie is Chinese, Lauren Tom, the actress, is Chinese, that she is, doesn't speak English, and is not, you know, from America, and is obviously just like some foreigner, is basically kind of what the line implies. So Rachel, in a very, very slow voice, says, "Welcome to our country." in
like,
what?
But not just like the slow voice, but also like the heightened volume.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, she's trying to teach, like, Julie how to speak English in like a super.
It's also like, when someone doesn't understand what you're saying, speaking louder is not going to help the issue.
I hate when
also
people do that. It's the worst. It's also so condescending. Like, it's just this total combination of like condescending, microaggression of racism, just not cool. But the writers obviously wrote this line in a way that, like, they recognized that Rachel was saying something that wasn't cool. Like, it wasn't like supposed to be like a, let's let Rachel get away with this racist line kind of thing. Like, they clearly wrote it in a way in which the entire audience is kind of cringing at Rachel, or at least that's how I feel. I feel like it's like a cringy line. And then Julie responds in a very, very also condescending tone, beautifully, like, first line, basically.
But like a mirrored tone.
Yeah.
Like, just like mirrors exactly how Rachel's being, to like demonstrate how ridiculous like the heightened volume and slow tone actually is.
And she's like, "Thank you. I'm from New York." Like, so good. So good. But let's maybe use this as a chance. It's kind of obnoxious because Friends just like is completely whitewashed. It's like a fully white cast, very, 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 very few people of color. I think we've pointed out in the past that it's maybe three or four. There's only three or four people of color who appear more than once in the same role in the show. So a few people.
And Julie is one of them.
Julie is one of them, in which she has like actual real lines. But as we've discussed, they don't really go deep into her character. Maybe we'll talk about that more in later episodes. But so it's frustrating that the only times in which we can actually talk about basically people of color in this show is when we are talking about the racism that exists in this show, or the lack thereof, people of color in general in the show. You know, like the fact that like the only time we can talk about, like the show gives us the space to talk about Indigenous rights is like when, you know, we're talking about a Thanksgiving episode, which is like really fucked up. Like we should be able to have these conversations because there should be Indigenous people in the show in general, you know, and like there should be people of color or BIPOC in general throughout the show, but rather it just didn't, it's not written that way. And this is a massive issue with Friends that we've talked about in the past. And so, you know, the space that we have to talk about these issues is very limited, to when there's racism, which is really frustrating. So let's talk a little bit about anti-Asian racism.
We both wanted to talk about anti-Asian racism and come from like two different kind of positions. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you, because I feel like you want to kind of talk about, you did some, a little bit of research into like some more of like anti-Asian racism history in Canada. So do you want to start off with that?
Yeah, totally. So I've always known that the history of Canada is racist. Like, obviously, you can't live in Canada and not know that. Well, you can. Actually, a lot of people do live in Canada and think that Canada is not racist. So I take that back. But I guess doing this episode, it gave me a chance to dive more into specifically anti-Asian racism. And so I did quite a bit of research, you know, looked up a few different perspectives around anti-Asian racism. Of course, if you go on any Canadian government website, they really, really make it seem like it wasn't so bad. of course.
Classic.
But like, it should be known that, you know, the Canadian Pacific Railroad that was built across Canada in the 1880s was primarily built by Chinese immigrants. And it should be noted that even though Chinese workers made up the majority of the people who built this railroad, they were actually paid half the salary of any other white workers working on the railroad. They had to pay their own food and gear, whereas white workers did not have to pay for any of their provisions. And most of the time, Chinese workers had to basically deal with a lot more of the dangerous tasks involved in building this railroad. And then when it was finally...
And for the record, there are some like extremely dangerous tasks back then for building a railroad.
Yeah, for sure. Literally thousands of Chinese immigrants died building the Canadian Pacific Railroad that still exists today. And so that's one aspect of, you know, anti-Asian racism in Canada. But to kind of go further along the history, we also had an Immigration Act of 1885. Some people even just called it straight up the Chinese Immigration Act because it put a head tax on any Chinese immigrant coming to Canada. So they had to pay $50 Canadian. And then to take that even further down the line, eventually they basically fully banned Chinese immigrants from coming into Canada. And that was a ban that took place for a long, long time. It wasn't like it was one of those things where it was like not like a clear ban. Like it doesn't explicitly say Chinese people can't come to Canada. It's like worded in this way where like at the time, you know, they could get away with it. They wouldn't be able to get away with it nowadays. Well, there's a lot of other things we're still getting away with when it comes to racism. But anyways, so all of that to say that this culminated into a massive anti-Asian riot that took place in BC, in Vancouver, in which a bunch of white supremacists rallied to basically fight any Asians coming into Canada, whether they were Chinese immigrants, whether they were Japanese. And they literally had a slogan, "White Canada Forever," was the slogan that they had. This was in 1907. To add to that, so just taking that 40 years later, it was only 40 years later in Canada that Chinese and other Asian Canadians got the right to vote in Canada. And even still, Japanese Canadians still weren't allowed to vote because there was a whole bunch of slew of racism against Japanese Canadians because of Pearl Harbor during World War II. And so that was a huge part of Canadian history. So it's just wild to like read about all of these things. And I know I just went for a very long time about this, but we're going to include a bunch of this in the links in our show notes, just because I think it's actually really worth reading about the history of anti-Asian racism, because I feel often, at least in my experience of like existing in a bunch of primarily white friend groups, family, etc., there seems to be this like idea that, you know, Asians don't face racism, like this kind of like platitude around racism when it comes to Asian Canadians. And it's just like important to recognize the ways in which that's just not true, whether it is historically or now. And I'll use that as a transition for Quinn to talk about the now.
Yeah. And before I transition over, I just want to like point out how, you know, like you're saying that like these laws were like ambiguous, and they weren't like direct, but they definitely affected Asian immigration and Asian immigrants and Asian citizens, and then how like it turned into riots and whatnot. And I guess I just like want to point out the power of like the fact that like laws can just like seemingly be like not about a certain thing, but when we actually like look at how they like apply, like that's where the truth lies, if that makes sense, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it's just so easy to like, you know, especially from like an outside like white person perspective, to like look at something and be like, I don't see how that like is a thing, and then kind of like when you follow the lines of how it plays out, like being able to then recognize like, oh, this is a racist situation, you know?
Yeah. Just to clarify though, there were some of the laws back in the 1880s that were straight up like, no, Chinese immigrants cannot come. I'm talking more a little bit right. As it evolved, like they were trying to show that they're progressive. And so they kind of changed the wording, but it still implied and meant the same things. Right. Yeah. Just to clarify, there were some that were fully written in the way that it was Chinese immigrants are excluded fully from coming to Canada, just to specify.
Right. Yeah. And then how these laws like also validated people to like think that it was okay to like go on the streets and declare that we are supposed to have a white Canada.
Yeah.
But in line with that, like, what you were just saying is that like anti-Asian racism is going to look different from anti-Black racism, is going to look different from anti-Indigenous racism, and so forth. And also wanting to point out that like neither Emily nor I are like an authority on this. Obviously, we are white, and like that's not like we literally cannot be an authority in any capacity. No white person can. I also want to like kind of like talk about how this is like so even more so applicable in conversation right now, even though like racism should always be in conversation. But like right now I'm like looking at an article on my computer that's entitled "Anti-Asian Hate Crime Incidents Rose by 878% Compared to Last Year, Vancouver Police Report Says."
That's wild.
Yeah, and so this is on CTV News. This is in Canada, in Vancouver. And this was published in October on October 29th, 2020. So just a few months ago. And so, like, this is something to recognize right now, where when it comes to the conspiracy theories around COVID, that somehow this has led people to feel entitled to basically have, like, enact hate crimes versus Asian folks. You know, I know that a lot of Asian businesses are really like suffering from that. Like all small businesses right now are really like struggling, but there has been like a lot of Asian businesses, Asian owned and run businesses have really, really been suffering, especially because of this particular racism that that seems to be like very normalized right now. And I also want to point to our actual like leadership within our politicians right now, because not so long ago we had Derek Sloan, who is an MP of our conservative party. I'm saying our as in because like the reality is that like all the politicians come from Canadian people, and therefore we have to hold all of them accountable. We can't just ignore the ones that we don't like and what they say. But essentially, so Derek Sloan is an MP for the, so that means that he's elected in and is like a part of the caucus and whatnot. And he made a statement that Dr. Theresa Tam, who is the Canada's chief public health officer, he asked her publicly whether she's working for Canada or for China. And which is just like, this is like a politician in our government who had the audacity to make such a racist statement. And, and I just want to point out that, like, because recently he was actually kicked out of the Conservative caucus, and I think that, like, Aaron O'Toole has sort of, like, put out a letter kind of patting himself on the back, being like, look, we're so progressive. But I also just want to point out that Aaron O'Toole, who is the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, when the Conservative Party voted as to whether or not Derek Sloan should apologize for this statement to Dr. Theresa Tam, only two people voted that he shouldn't have to. And those two people were Derek Sloan himself and Aaron O'Toole, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. So
that's the world we live in. That's fucked. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. And so I feel like, when we're talking about like racism and looking at politics, we can't just like look at what people are saying and touting, but also looking at like the more practical implications of what they're voting for, mm-hmm. and what they're actually doing behind the scenes. Because like voting, we just have to take that part into consideration when we go to vote ourselves, essentially.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it definitely doesn't help that, like, you know, for a very long time, thank God not anymore, but, you know, Trump in, you know, Trump down south. It's so funny to say that. But Trump, you know, in the United States was saying some super racist shit around COVID-19, calling it things like the Chinese virus, calling it Kung Flu, and this, right. Like, it's just awful. But I do want to point out that I think sometimes because we hear so much about the racism down in the States, us Canadians like to distance ourselves from racism and like to distance ourselves from the States for that reason. We're like, well, thank God Canada is not like that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it should be pointed out that I did find a statistic today that said that Canada has actually a higher number of anti-Asian racism reports per capita than the United States. So there were actually, in the past year, per capita, there were more hate crimes against Asians in Canada than the United States. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's really intense.
So distancing ourselves is not the way to go, basically.
Yeah. And I guess that actually leads me into like wanting to ask our audience, because us being Canadian and we have a fair amount of Canadian listeners, I feel like it's very obvious that we're like right next door to the US. And so we do a lot of like comparing our politics to American politics. But I'm very curious to our listeners everywhere else in the world, like, what do you feel like your country also does this? Like, do you do the thing that Canada always does where it's like, we're not as bad as the US, so like we're ahead of the curve, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Have you found that like anti-Asian racism has been higher within your country, no matter where it is? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's yeah, that would be great to know. Okay, so that was a lot. And so we'll include a lot of that information in our show notes. But this is what a way to kick off, you know, season two, episode one, just going right, right into like a 40-minute conversation around racism. okay, so let us move on to Monica's apartment. So, you know, the whole crew is there, obviously, besides Ross and Rachel, who are still at the airport. Monica's wearing a fabulous flowery outfit, which is like halfway thigh length. And like, it's a t-shirt dress kind of thing, but it's like fitted and flowery. And I just love it. And it's just one of those things where like you see and you're like, wow, I wish I could wear one of those things, but that is just not on my brand. So that is, it's just not something I would wear.
It's not on your brand.
But I just really appreciate that she wears it in this scene. Chandler and Joey have new haircuts by Phoebe. Phoebe cut their hair. And now, you know, Monica wants Phoebe to also cut her hair. But that conversation gets rudely interrupted by, not rudely interrupted, I'm totally kidding, Rachel frantically running up the stairs, completely out of breath, in the most relatable out of breath moment of my life. Like, the number of times I felt that way is unreal, where you're like,
oh my God,
total panting. I find she does such a great job here acting in this scene.
Yeah.
And she gets super pissed at Chandler, and she was like, you said he liked me. What is happening here? Like, you know, she starts getting, starts going off on him. And then obviously Julie and Ross walk in the door.
you
slowpokes. Yeah, and so the team gets introduced to Julie, who, by the way, seems so sweet. She's like, okay, but you know, you haven't met me yet. Like, I just need to like sleep and get into this time zone, and then you can meet me, you know, and you're just like, aw, Julie, you're so nice. But obviously,
and you could just tell. What? You could just tell that she has like a great sense of humor as well, and is just like so down to earth.
I know.
I think I legit have like an intense crush on Julie.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Like, the more we talk about her, I'm like so excited. I love her so much.
I don't know, like, I actually don't know how crushy I am for her, but I definitely like think that she would, she definitely seems like the nicest of them. Like, they could all be like really mean to each other, and she is like the nicest one.
Julie, I love our group of friends, but you're way too good for them.
Which, you know, if you actually think about it, like, this is something that maybe we could talk about more in a different episode, because we've already talked so much about anti-Asian racism in this episode, but it is quite often a trope that Asian women in movies and TV shows are like portrayed as being very docile and very quiet and very like kind and people pleasing. So part of me wonders if the writing of Julie's character is like based on that microaggression, you know, that kind of stereotype. But I don't know, that would be something maybe to talk to, maybe we could have a guest to talk about this
as we get to learn more about Julie. We can go further into that.
Yeah, for sure.
Thus far I just find her very relatable.
Yes. She's great. Yeah, and then I put in my notes here, I wrote, because we're gonna see so many good Rachel has a crush moments in the 10 seasons of Friends, but Rachel is just becomes the most foolish person in the world when she has a crush on people. She just doesn't function. Yeah. She just like doesn't know how to be a human. And she's just like, she's just so embarrassing. She's like cringe city. Cringe city.
So cringe city.
But like also relatable, like, cringe city. Like, I don't know about you, but like when I have a crush on someone, I just forget how to speak words. Like, I just don't even know how to be a real human.
oh my God. Okay. Don't even talk to me about that being relatable right now.
it's embarrassing. Like, and these crushes like are for like anyone. Like sometimes like, you know, like sometimes it's just like thinking someone is like slightly polite to you and you're like, oh my God, they were polite to me. How do I talk to this person? You know?
Like, our standard for men specifically is pretty low.
Yeah, I know, right? But like, yeah, no. So like, I think that this feeling of like knowing this guy your whole life, or not like your whole life, but a huge part of your life, and then like always being able to talk to him, always being fine, and then like having this moment of like, oh my God, I have a crush on him, and then suddenly collapsing into this like puddle of like nonsensical human being where she can't even function. And it's just relatable. Well,
yeah, but even more so, it's just like the catastrophic like explosion of like, wait, what? Like, she spent the last 2 weeks basically like getting to the point of being like, yes, I can date this person.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then building it up and being really excited about it. And then like, ouch.
Yeah. And then she gets, oh, there's just so many good lines in this show. Oh my God. I'm actually like trying to not give, like, just say this whole episode line
just
by
say
line.
Every single.
But like this line from Rachel where she goes, isn't that just kick you in the crotch, spit on your neck, fantastic. And it's just like, oh, that's so good. And Monica having to justify it and being like, it's an expression. It's so funny.
I know. I love how like Monica has her back there, you know, like.
Yeah.
Okay, I also want to point out from our polls, have you ever thought you were about to start dating someone only to find out they're suddenly with someone else? And I want to point out that 74% of people said yes to that.
Wait,
and I just...
What? That is wild.
Yeah,
I
that's like
harsh.
I would
not have expected that. Yeah, no, I that's never happened to me. Mind you, like I always think people don't want to date me in general. So I was very shocked when Ilias wanted to date me. I was like, I'm sorry, what now? And it took a year of him wanting to date me for me to be like, okay, yeah, sure, I guess I'll date you. So I guess I'm not very good at that.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just a lot of people. Anyway, my heart goes out to everyone.
Man.
It's a harsh reality. So anyway, Rachel's situation, very relatable apparently.
Yes. Okay, can we go right to the next scene? Because I want to talk about it.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I want to talk about how Rachel like is like super, super nice to Ross when he walks in, and then is like super rude to Chandler, and just like uses her power of like being able to give them coffee or not for evil. Like, she's like, I'm not giving you coffee until you go and do this thing that I need you to do.
Also, I want to point out that she's still wearing the same Band-Aid on her head.
That's
like,
cute.
Zebra Band-Aid, guys.
I like that consistency.
Yeah, that's okay, yeah, I guess so. I just think it's funny that, like, I think that Rachel, of all people, and maybe it just demonstrates how, like, scattered she is in this moment, but I feel like Rachel wouldn't be caught dead normally with, like, a zebra print Band-Aid on her forehead. I also want to point out here, this is the shirt. The shirt that she's wearing in this scene, where it's, like, this, like, blue shirt, collared button up, kind of almost like very like 50s diner style, or no, a bowling shirt. That's what it is. It even has like a name embroidered on it that it does not say Rachel, and it's like short sleeve. This is the one that in the next scene we're going to see Chandler wearing a shirt that is red and like a bowling shirt. It's like they joined a bowling crew since the last season.
Wow. Yeah, that's very specific. Maybe that's their secret lives. Maybe that's like something we just don't know about. Maybe like, you know how there's like so many things where I'm like, I wonder if that just like happened outside of this episode. Like, you know, you like build the world of Friends behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, we only get these snippets into these like random days of their lives. Maybe for all we know, they like have a bowling team. Who knows?
Yeah. And we just never comes up in the time that the camera crew is there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Okay. Then we get another one of these like super obnoxious Ross moments where he's like, you know what, Chandler, you told me that I need to move on. And so I moved on. And it pisses me off so much because it's like, you didn't actually need to move on until you told her that you liked her. And then like, she rejected you, and then you could have moved on. Like, not saying that, you know, you can't move on whenever you want to move on, but like, I guess I just like, I find it so frustrating that he's painted it in this like way in which like he's the victim of this like tragic love story. Whereas like, you know, like you just never told her how you feel, right? Like you probably should have just done that, you know? And so, and obviously that's like the premise for Ross and Rachel's relationship is like total lack of communication through 10 seasons of Friends. That's like literally the should be their tagline. Not communicating since 1994. I hope they're communicating now wherever they are in their land.
I have mixed feelings about this statement that you just made because I don't disagree with you. I totally agree with you. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, there is some like part of the issue that we had through all of season one was the fact that like you're whining and pining over this and being controlling and like trying to be almost like manipulative of the situation, but you won't actually like talk to her directly. And like, that is the issue. Yeah. Whereas like now he's like, okay, like now I'm going to move on. And that's that. Like, that's what we like. That was like one of the options that we talked about like last season, the entire time we were like one or the other, you know?
Totally. And I'm all like, for that, but I totally agree with you, but I guess I just mean it in the sense that I just feel like the way he phrases it or like the vibe I get from him is this, like, I don't know. It just, I feel like he's like he just, I don't know. I just think that he could have had the chance to communicate and he just chose not to. And that's fine. Sure. But like painting it in this way of like, Chandler, you convinced me to move on when like, I don't really know if that's what it was. Like, I think you just like didn't want to be rejected and so you moved on. I don't know.
Right. Okay, but that in yes, don't disagree again. However, I also think that there is like value in like
preserving a friendship and stuff like that.
And yada yada, yeah. But like I guess it's like, and then that also like you choosing to do that, like there can be space for you to also like grieve the loss of like of fantasizing about you and this person possibly having a romantic relationship. Like, I think that that's like a reasonable thing that could very much happen when you like choose the path of being like, okay, I'm in love with this person or I have a big crush on this person and I'm going to choose that I want to like protect and like embrace the friendship side of things so I can have this person in my life with permanence and kind of let go of the possibility of other things. Like, I think it would make sense that there's like
a you're
grief
right.
aspect to that.
You're right. I take back my criticism. You're right.
But it also makes sense though that like that we are very frustrated with him at this point because it's like you've literally, and I think this is the essence of Ross, we're just like milking self-sorrow for an extended period of time that it's sort of like, we're tapped out, dude. Like, we can't help you feel sorry for yourself anymore.
Yeah, I think that's like part of it. And it's also just like us as an audience are frustrated by his lack of communication. Like, if he was like a real friend in my life, I'd be super proud of him for like taking the time to like move on. I would also kind of be annoyed with him that I had to listen to him for an entire year talk about how he was in love with someone and still he never did anything about it. Like, oh my God, you know? So like that would just be like, yeah, anyways, but whatever. That's just me. Okay, I feel like we are taking our sweet-ass time to talk about this episode. And we should maybe figure our shit out a little bit.
I think we need to just power through this storyline.
Okay, we're doing storyline. We're not doing scene by scene?
Yeah, I think we should just do storyline.
Oh my God, what? Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that no, I'm not prepared for that. I don't know how to handle that.
Okay. Okay. My notes are. I not take like, it back. Okay. Never mind. Etch a sketch.
Okay. I want to go right into the next scene, which has, again, you know, I told you one of my favorite lines of the episode, but there's two of the best favorite lines coming up in the next scene, and I wrote both of them down because they're so integral to two people's characters. And okay, the first one is literally in the next scene. Monica comes up to Phoebe, and she's like, "Do you know what I'm thinking?" And they go on to talk about how she wants, you know, Phoebe to give her a haircut. But Phoebe in this moment has such a Phoebe line. And she says, you're thinking how it's been so long since you've had sex that you're wondering if they've changed it. And it's just like, what? It's just like the most random fucking thing in the world. And it's just like, so Phoebe, who's like completely oblivious to like regular social ways of like communicating, and just like, obviously Monica's thinking this thing. Maybe this is something she thinks on a regular basis. I don't know. But Monica's reaction is great too.
Now it is. So I have recently started dating again. I posted something up on our Instagram to sort of indicate that, because I came across a funny Friends reference in someone's profile. But I've like, quote unquote, started dating again. It's a pandemic, so it's all very vague. But I feel like, so it's been a really long time since I've dated. I've taken a hiatus for like 2 years now. And I basically, like, every time I think of dating, I think of this line, like, literally every time, as though, like, Phoebe is, like, asking it to me, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is all I can think about.
So funny.
Anyway, but I also just think this is, like, so relatable to so many people, like, today on Valentine's Day, where it's just, like, we're living in a world where it's, like, starting a new relationship is, like, not fully possible right now. Like, Toronto's in, like, full-on lockdown right now.
Yeah.
And then, like, everyone who's like in a relationship is like so sick of their partner because they're like literally in quarantine with their partner. And it's just sort of like, I just feel like this is a line that I think a lot of people kind of, it just, I think it's relevant to the times.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's true. Okay. So then Phoebe says no to getting her hair cut because Monica is super intense and controlling. And then Chandler walks in, and Chandler wants to know if anyone knows of a good tailor. And this plot starts.
But
Joey says that he knows someone, and then he can't remember when he met this person, and he just kind of keeps flopping back between the ages, and then we get my absolute all-time top 10 favorite Chandler line in the world, because I think it's just done so well. He says, Joey, you have to stop the Q-tip when there's resistance. And it is just like it's just one of those things, like one of those lines that you really visualize, I find. Like, I'm just like imagining when like I use a Q-tip, and I think it every single time I use a Q-tip, I'm like so careful and gentle, because it's like, because you actually shouldn't use Q-tips in your ears, right? It's just like,
yeah,
it's just this like hilarious moment where every single time I use a Q-tip, I'm like, okay, don't let it go too far in. So good.
Oh my god,
yeah, what a line.
I mean, the worst thing that you'll do is, you know, burst your eardrum, but that can have some pretty intense effects on your ability to stand straight. So
that's true. Yeah. So glad that didn't happen.
Joey isn't very wobbly, so I don't think it was a Q-tip thing for.
That's true. And then, meanwhile, all of this is happening. Ross gets a phone call from Julie at the apartment. This is a huge scene. So many things happen in this scene. And Ross is being the most obnoxious human being in the history of the world.
In the freaking world. Oh, like, my
God.
Like,
who does this? Like, it doesn't even matter that Rachel has a crush on him. If Rachel didn't have a crush on him, this would be the most obnoxious thing in the world. Like, imagine – he sits so close to her, and he's just making this noise, and he's just – He's just obnoxious. He's just, I just want him to leave.
And poor Rachel is like in the middle of this. It's intense.
And
Ross,
then she hangs
you're
up.
Being intense.
She hangs up. Thank God. That was great. I condemn her.
It's like one of,
what's the term?
It's
not condemn.
Condone?
No, that's bad. Congratulate her, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. I'm stoked that she does this, is what I'm trying to say.
I think it's like, okay, we don't know the word, but
don't look it up. Don't do
kudos.
It.
Kudos. yeah, no, I think that Rachel hanging up the phone is like, Like, I really hope that if I'm ever in that position, that I would have the guts to do exactly what she did.
Yeah. And then she's dainty response where she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh. I thought you were talking to me. And it's just like pure innocence oozing out of her in this like super sweet, snaky kind of way. It's so good. Oh, I love it.
Also, like, quick thinking, Rachel.
Yeah, I know. So funny. Okay. So she's also wearing a dope outfit. I put that in my notes. She's wearing this like really cute crop top situation. Okay. So she leaves out of frustration and we find out where she went because the next scene is the next morning. And lo and behold, our favorite all-time creep, Paolo, is there.
He arrives. I mean, like, Rachel's trying to hide him as she opens the door and wants to sneak him out. And he's, like, very obnoxiously open to be like, what are you doing here? I'm doing Rachel.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So good. And then she gets this, like, super sweet line. And I just want to give her a hug. And she's, like, I find she does this acting so well. Like, she kind of sits on the floor. And she's got, like, her knees kind of pulled into her chest. And her arms wrapped around her legs. And she's just, like, so sad. And she's just, like, I know I'm pathetic. I'm a loser. And you're just, like, oh, Rachel, like, we've been there. Like, that feeling where you like kind of do this like really self-deprecating thing because you're sad, or you're just like, you sleep with someone who you know you shouldn't sleep with because you're sad, or you like do something stupid because you're sad. Like, it's just such a very human, I think, moment for Rachel.
I also want to point out like the slut shaming that's happening in this this scene, and like it's interesting. I find it's just a very interesting situation because like on the one side they're like consoling Rachel, but on the other side, especially including like what Monica says, at the same time there's like an inherent like slut shaminess to the situation as well, like kind of being like, oh,
I didn't
this
really
was
feel like it was slut shamey. I felt it was more like it, shaming. I don't know, like I guess I just it felt more like this like embarrassment of like getting together with an ex or someone who treated you poorly or like kind of resorting back to like bad habits than it was like slut shamey, but maybe it was slut shamey. I don't know. I didn't think
like I find especially when like Monica starts going on about like, you know, if I had a blah 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 for every time I, and then stops herself like as though it's like a bad thing or something, and then kind of is like, but we're talking about you and your mistake, and I feel like there's always so much more like weight on like the choices of like who women are sleeping with.
Totally,
and and we could go down another whole other nuanced conversation about like how you know, using sex as like a coping mechanism can be really unhealthy and an addiction. But on the other side, like also, you know, like, so what? She like wanted to sleep with someone and like used her ex that also just so happened to be really shitty, you know? Yeah.
Yes and no. Cause I do feel like it was part, like her sleeping with him was not like, like it was like a way to make herself feel better, but in turn just made her feel worse, which like I think like people make decisions like that all the time, not sex related. You know what I mean? Like when I was heavily drinking, like I would often turn to alcohol as a way to like be self-deprecative to myself, like to make myself feel better, but in turn it would just make, you know, make me feel worse. So I don't know if it's like the sex itself, it was like doing this thing that like would kind of almost like allow her to feel shame about herself. Like she almost wanted to, like, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Right.
It's so complicated.
It is hard to say. Cause also like, you know, like binge drinking once cause you feel bad about yourself doesn't make you an alcoholic. Right. It's like, it's a pattern and a dependence that like that is created. It's like a relationship with like the substance or the relationship with having sex. And so it's like she does this once and it's like this huge deal. And it's sort of like, it's okay. Like you have a few more times of doing this before we're going to be concerned about it. Okay.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. You're right. You're right. There is like an element of like, yeah, whatever. Like it wasn't the greatest.
You've literally never done this before.
Yeah, totally.
But what I find actually much more interesting in this, though, is the fact that like Paolo being the ex is it's too simplistic of a situation because this actually also really affects Phoebe because like pan over to like what's happening next and like Paolo is assaulting Phoebe again casually in the kitchen. He has his hand grabbing her ass while she's like offering him coffee or like trying to pour herself some coffee or something like that. And it's like that was the issue with Paolo in the first place is that like, you know, he assaulted Phoebe in her place of work and like and you know, anyway, so he's a scumbag, but
anyways, Ross gets a great reaction when he sees that Paolo's there. He like, Paolo's like excited to see him. And Ross does this excellent acting moment of like kind of shaking his hand and then pushing him away with his other hand.
It was, like, it was a hug. Paolo goes in and hugs him. And he just does this great, like pretends to hug. And then like, as he's leaving off, like pushes him.
Pushes him back. I just, like, it's so well
done. I just want to like snap all over that. Like, it's just so like smooth and like very indicative of how he actually feels, but also like not trying to like make a scene of the situation because he's like loves Rachel and wants to like support her and doesn't want that to become between them.
Yeah, anyway, totally. Okay, so I have to say that like, okay, so if we move on to the next scene where we're in Monica's bedroom and Phoebe finally is convinced then she's going to cut Monica's hair, I do feel like the plot line of like this Monica hair thing is like the least interesting thing that happens in this episode. Like I feel like they just kind of need to fill in the gaps for all the other things that were exciting that were happening in this episode.
That's fair. I don't see it as like such an intense plot line. I don't actually get most of the references in the future scenes to come about Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
But if you head over to our Facebook or our Instagram page, you'll see that we did a comparison of Monica with the haircut and what Dudley Moore's haircut looked like in 1995 when they filmed this. And it's actually a really good replica, in my opinion.
That's so funny.
So I think it's a pretty funny and poignant like storyline that's like kind of clever, that I didn't really fully embrace and understand until I actually took the time to like look it up Dudley and Moore, compare. Yeah.
And the puns, they have a few puns like later on, maybe just hopping ahead. We can just finish this storyline, I guess, because it's not super intense. But when like they have a couple of puns of like, oh, I think it's a 10. And like 10 is the name of a movie that Dudley Moore actually is in. That's where that pun comes from. And yeah, they're just like hardcore making fun of Monica. But we do get some excellent writing again when we have that moment where like basically Phoebe is comparing her bad haircut to like having, I guess, being diagnosed with something that's like, you know, or like being very ill and like on her deathbed or something, you know, when he's like, I'm not going to lie to you, Ross, it doesn't look good. You know,
this is the type of writing that is like just that I love that Friends has. And we're going to have like a few of these that are really good in this season, you know, that are like particularly awesome.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Okay. So then, all of that is happening while basically Chandler
goes to the tailor.
Yeah, he goes to the tailor and he gets a look on his face and we don't quite know what happened, but we can assume that there was some inappropriate touching. And so he comes back from the tailor and he says that he's got a bone to pick with Joey. And he basically says to Joey that his tailor, the word he used was cupping, but we can only assume you know, played with his testicles or touched his testicles. And this part is weird. Like the audience, it's kind of a weird joke. And like outside of like our, you know, leftist, politics and like our like understanding of like, this is sexual assault and shouldn't be joked about. Like, it's just kind of like, it's kind of weird. Like, it's really not okay. Actually, like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, whoa, like that is a really intense thing to throw in, that like this strange man touched his balls and like that was like a plot line in the episode. Like what, you know?
And I feel like, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because then like the whole episode there, Joey's trying to figure out how old he was when he started going to this tailor, and he settles on the fact that he was 15 when he first went. And this tailor has been doing this since he was 15. Like, this is like literally like child molestation. And so like they make this huge joke about it, and it's kind of weird. Like, look, don't get me wrong, I could take a freaking good joke any day, but like this one's just weird. It's weird.
I think it's just like the fact that like we can joke around about sexual assault, you know, because like a lot of people do need humor to like normalize things in a way of like that these things are real and exist. But it's different when this is a situation that it's not actually really addressed as sexual assault, and the reaction of like his friends is like similar to the whole Q-tip situation of like basically like shaming Joey for this thing that has been normalized to him, of like this old man like basically taking advantage of his naivety for his entire life, and like mm-hmm. and just like basically calling him an idiot for it instead of like sympathizing with the fact that like Joey is finding out that he's been assaulted for like, you know, 10 years of his life, going to see this person that he trusted. And like that part is completely lost. And like looking back at myself, like my younger self, when I first saw this episode, like I didn't really think of it that way. And it's, and there is like a certain power to like the way that we joke about these conversations and the way that we like bring humor into like serious situations can kind of like either create a more informed and like it like approach and look at it, or it can just normalize something in a way that is actually more harmful, which I feel like this is what this episode does.
Yeah, and like it's kind of frustrating because you watch it and like I laugh in this scene because it's like the way they've written it is like the Joe, like Chandler's reactions are really funny. Like it almost feels like in a bit of a way, like it's almost like Chandler is trying to like laugh about his own sexual assault. You know what I mean? Like this kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened to me. Like this is ridiculous. This is kind of like what? Like he's kind of, you know, but obviously it's not that. It's like the writers just wrote that it's funny, you know what I mean? Like they made it mm-hmm. seem like it's funny, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to look at. Like part of me is like, maybe it is kind of funny, but then I'm like, but it's not. It's kind of weird and gross and not okay.
I think it's like the way that they deal with Joey is the part that makes me the most.
Yeah, you're right. It's less like, about Chandler's reaction to it, and it's more about Joey finding this out. And then like later on, he's like sitting on the couch, and you can tell he's thinking about it because he turns to Chandler and he asks him another question about like, is it okay if the doctor does this, you know? And Chandler's like, yes, that's okay, you know? And like it's like this weird thing where like Joey is now literally questioning many interactions in his life of what's appropriate and what's not.
And I think that that's like a good point to like a good way to sort of segue this sort of statement of like the fact that people can be assaulted and not think that they were assaulted at the time, and then through later learning about what assault looks like understand that then they were assaulted. Yeah. And that can be like a traumatic thing to go through.
Totally.
And like, and it, the experience in and of itself at the time that it happened isn't always necessarily traumatic when someone is sexually assaulted. It can actually just be later down the line as the experience is processed and better understood that it becomes a traumatic incident.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And yeah, I 100% totally agree. And we could talk forever about this, honestly. But I think it's like, it's important to recognize that like, often, like male sexual assault is laughed at. Like it's kind of like, well, you're a man, you know, you could have defended yourself, or you know, this idea that like the power dynamic doesn't exist because it's a man assaulting a man, which is not true, you know. And I think that, I just think that we do need to do better as maybe a world, as a community, of talking about the fact that men can very much be sexually assaulted. And it's not just children who are molested. It's adult men can be sexually assaulted. And, you know, and there's also this like shame associated to it, because a lot of men have a lot of shame around anything related to being potentially gay too, which is like this underlying internalized homophobia. So men, you know, don't talk about this sexual assault maybe that they've experienced, because, you know, they don't want to potentially have people think that they're gay. And then there's also like the, you know, internalized sexism around male sexual assault too, because there's this idea of like being a quote unquote victim, or being, you know, a girl, or, you know, you often hear the phrase like being someone's bitch, you know. So I think it's like, we definitely need to be doing better to like create the space for men to talk about sexual assault. And, you know, that being said, maybe we can share a few links in our show notes for resources for people, for men who have been sexually assaulted, in case this, this, you know, maybe resonates with you and you want to seek some space or some help. Ross makes a really medium, almost terrible, definitely terrible joke to Joey when Joey says the thing about him, you know, that's how Taylors do it. Ross says, yeah, maybe that's how they do it in prison. So just to briefly bring up, we've talked a lot about this again already, but just to briefly bring up a bit of stats, I think it's important to recognize that, well, first of all, rape in prison is still rape. And we need to stop joking about prison rape, because it's not funny. And it is a very, very big issue. And it should be noted that a study was done in 1996 in American prison systems, and they found that anywhere from 9 to 20% of prisons across the states, basically 9 to 20% of inmates had been sexually assaulted. And of those people who had been sexually assaulted, 18% of the assaults were carried out by prison staff themselves. So just recognizing that rape in prison is not a joke, and we really, really, really need to stop writing that joke into scripts, because it happens all the time, and it's embarrassing how often it happens, because it's just not funny, and it definitely needs to stop being joked about.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is 1991 is when the Sublime song "Date Rape" came out,
yeah,
which is basically like this comedic song of like someone who's a rapist, which, like, it's very hard to find any sort of empathy for someone who's, like, and also this is, like, described as someone who is, like, a fairly violent rapist here. But the whole point of the song is, like, good, you're going to go to prison, and you're going to, like, you're going to be raped for the rest of your life by other people.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not the moral of the story, guys.
Yeah. Even if you commit rape, it does not mean that you deserve to be raped. Let's put a little bit of emphasis on that.
And then also, even furthermore, we could tangent further into, like, also just the prison industrial system as a whole, and, like, not to mentioning the fact that there are a lot of people in prison that, like, should not be there, but also in North America, our prison system is, like, super ridiculous, and, like, it basically is, like, a form of just dehumanizing people as some, like, you know, like, monster under the bed approach to trying to, like, manage the fact that our society is not equal for so many people, and it leaves people in situations where they have to try to, like, find alternative ways to you know, take care of themselves and their family. And so it's just as a whole, like, normalizing that, like, oh yeah, there's rape in prisons, it's normal, and is just, like, very indicative of, like, so many societal issues at play. And on a very basic level, rape in prison is not cool. People, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's not funny, essentially, is what I'm actually meaning to say.
Agreed.
Okay.
Okay. So all that being said, we could literally have, like, an entire episode just about that, because, like, it's just such an important conversation. But we can move on. And in this next scene, Joey is talking about how he's talking to Rachel, and he's like, oh, you know, I can sense when women are desperate and vulnerable, is what he says. Depressed and vulnerable, sorry. And I think, like, there's this idea that, you know, Joey is often being really, really gross to women. But just because Joey is really, really gross to women, it doesn't justify men or anyone else being really, really gross and inappropriate to Joey. So it's not like a, you know, whatever it is, that expression. It's not an eye for an eye, you know?
No, exactly. I mean, a society should have a restorative justice approach. It's not about continuously revenge and repeating our mistakes, but yeah, instead, exactly, like, educating everyone to be on the same page of, like, what is acceptable behavior and how to respect each other.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, yeah. So in that conversation, Rachel is basically saying, like, I can't tell Ross, he's with Julie. And then Joey is basically like, what about Julie? Like, he's been in love with you for 9 freaking years, and she's only been his, you know, his girlfriend for 2 weeks. Like, and I totally 100% agree with Joey on this one. And it's funny because Joey has been the one who gives Ross usually the best advice about Rachel. He's been the one that's been like, you have to tell her how you feel. You have to tell her how you feel. And, like, now he's telling Rachel, you have to tell him how you feel. Like, it's so funny that he seems to be the one that actually, like, even despite being, like, kind of the worst to women, seems to, like, be the maybe the best communicator. I don't know.
Yeah, he has been, like, a very strong sense of, like, what's it called? Like, just, like, reason in the situation. And yeah, I definitely see that. And I think what he says is, like, a really beautiful thing. And ironically, though, in the next scene, when Rachel goes and tries to, like, basically follow his advice, it kind of becomes a little difficult, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And this is, again, another one of those heartbreaking moments. And it's, like, I think basically one of the last scenes in the episode, but where he's just explaining to her what she deserves, and that she deserves, like, someone who really cares about her and recognizes her wonderfulness and her beauty and how sexy she is and how smart she is and how funny she is. And, like, he's just going off about how wonderful she is, basically. And, like, my heart breaks for her in this moment where she's just like,
yeah, it's like the first time that she's, like, seen him, like, seen his compliments from actually the point of view of what they are. You know what I mean? Like, before, mm-hmm, in, like, season one, he would, like, say nice things to her, and she really just kind of took it as, like, you're my friend and you love me. And whereas, like, now she's seen it in the light of, like, oh, you think I'm wonderful and I think you're wonderful. And, like you love me in a way that I want to be loved, essentially. Yeah. And, like, it is really heartbreaking. Oh.
Yeah.
But then, so of course, what happens is that the tables now have turned. Yeah. And Rachel can't get her words together in order to tell Ross of the situation. And I want to point out that, like, because, like, I thought of myself when I thought of the situation, I was like, you know what? Realistically, I probably, in that moment, would not have had the guts to say something. And the reason I say this is because I feel like in recent times of, like, meeting people that I have crushy feels for, I've literally realized, I mean, I'm very out of practice, but I've literally realized that I, like, I just can't deal.
I agree. I think that, I don't know how I would feel in this situation with Rachel, like, whether or not to tell Ross. I think it's hard because in the back of my mind, if I was in her position, I would know that, you know, he actually did love me for that long. But the fact that he never actually physically told her that he loved her for that long, it's like only people told her this. I can imagine
the, like, self-doubt
in that moment, doubting it. Yeah, exactly. Like, well, like, he never told me, so he couldn't have actually loved me that much. And, like, now he's with someone else. Like, I'm not going to step into that, you know? So, yeah, I can imagine the difficulty in that. So,
yeah. It's relatable to, like, become, like, an awkward toad relatable. When you're, like, and feeling very vulnerable. However, there is, like, a little echo of, like, tables have turned and I'm just curious how, like, I mean, the context is different because, like, you know, now Rachel's been told that she likes him and he hasn't told her. But, like, there is, like, almost like a bit of a reflecting of, like, last season, but Ross was in the situation, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah, sure. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely feels different. And I think that the key difference in this moment is the fact that, like, Rachel did not, well, at least not in this episode, because we know she will in future episodes, but she's not trying to sabotage the relationship that Ross is currently in, which we know that Ross has actively tried to sabotage past relationships of Rachel while he's had a crush on her. Honestly, they're just, like, kind of not great people when it comes to, like, jealousy and the love that they have for one another. I think they can bring out the worst in each other sometimes, and we'll see that in future episodes, I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah, so this episode kind of ends with that little, like, sad Rachel moment, except that we've got the final scene in which we do see that Rachel kind of sabotages right away.
But, has a pettiness.
Yeah, this petty sabotaging Julie thing where she basically tells Phoebe to make her look like the guy from Planet of the Apes, cut her hair like the guy from Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is rough.
Which is, like, funny for a sitcom, but also, you know, unfortunate within the context of the world of, like, women having to be in competition with each other all the time and how that, like, is very, like, normalized and plays out.
I think, you know, it's funny because we've had so many long conversations in this episode, so maybe we shouldn't get into this in a long way, but I often think of, like, the difference between talking about and criticizing, like, a drama show or, like, a more serious show versus talking about and criticizing a sitcom, because the whole premise of a sitcom is literally, it's called a situational comedy, right? That's what sitcom stands for. So they actively create miscommunications. They actively create these, like, cringe moments, these, like, inappropriate moments in order to make a comedy out of it. Like, that's the whole premise of a sitcom. So it's hard to know, you know, like, how to critique it in a lot of ways. Cause it's like, I get that they're, like, it almost, like, sometimes I find that we get into this position where we're like, well, if this was a real life friend group, this would be a really, like, toxic dynamic. But, like, since this is a comedy show, it's fine, you know? And so it's like, it's interesting how that happens, you know? Like,
yeah, you know what? I didn't actually even know that that's what sitcom stood for. It's going to sound really silly, but I kind of, like, just pictured it as, like, because sitcoms, from the way that, like, I remember them in the 90s, they were usually, like, a live audience of some sort. And so I just like thought it was like I don't know, like there's sitting.
Like
involved.
You sit to watch it.
I can't believe
it.
I'm saying the more when I say it out loud, I'm like, wow, this is the most ridiculous thought process, Quinn.
That's so funny. Oh my god, yeah, no, it stands for situational comedy. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't actually know that. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. All right. Well, yeah, so that's the episode. That's our very, very long premiere podcast episode.
I know, right? And we didn't even cover everything. Like next episode, we're going to be doing the thing of sort of like setting the scene of the year and what happens in like that point in history between September 1995 and I think when is it? Like June in 1996.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We didn't do that.
Right. But for this time, who is your favorite? Who do you think was the best friend of the episode?
It's hard. Definitely not Joey and Ross, based on the reaction that they have to... Sorry, definitely not Chandler and Ross, based on the reaction that they have about Joey.
Yeah.
I definitely want to... they're all medium. Mm-hmm. Phoebe, like, tries her best in this episode. I honestly would say Joey.
Yeah, like, that's what I was sort of leaning towards as well. Like, I think he gives some really sound advice in it and is, like, really supportive, despite the fact he's going through trauma and shouldn't have to.
Right.
Yeah, I think that I can see Joey as being the best friend.
Yeah, the way he kind of supports Rachel in this moment.
Like Monica's like not super relevant to the episode, I feel. And Phoebe is kind of removed from the middle most drama that's happening, I think. Yeah. Although she does a really good job of supporting Monica through her mistake. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But I think I still vote Joey.
Yeah, I vote Joey too, which is funny. Funny because we often shit on Joey a lot. For good reason. Mm-hmm. All right. So that being said, thank you for joining us for our season 2, episode 1 podcast.
God. Every time we say season 2, I'm like,
I know, it's incredible. So my name is Emily B. You can find me on my website, emilybyoga.com, or on Instagram, @EmilyByoga. And that's Emily with an IE, not a Y.
And my name is Quinn, and you can find me at quinnkbrunet.com or TheBasicNB on Instagram. And also, before we head out, another big thank you to our patrons, and another big thank you to Salty Yoga, who has paired with us. And so if you like bar and yoga and meditation classes, folks, head on over to Salty Yoga Online. Use our promo code for 25% off for your first 3 months subscribed to Salty Yoga Online. And you'll be supporting our show because we'll be getting a kickback for it. And you'll be supporting a small business in Peterborough specifically, and Kingston actually. Lastly, you get a 7-day free trial. Yeah, and also you'll be benefiting yourself by giving yourself some space to practice some yoga.
And so as always, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on all of your favorite podcast listening places. Feel free to send us messages, thoughts, comments, questions. We'd love to hear them and answer them on the show. That means a lot to us to be able to connect with you guys. And you can find us on our Instagram, WTPhalangePodcast, and soon our website, which we will announce, I guess, in the next couple of weeks. So that's exciting. Don't forget that our podcast, our polls are released every second Tuesday, and our podcast is released every second Tuesday. So we will see you guys, or you will hear us, in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for joining.
Don't forget to keep deconstructing and diversifying the media you consume. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.